And I am with NORC at the University of Chicago. I am in our Bethesda, Maryland office, which is just designed to confuse you. This is a project that is funded by the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluation, which is why the name is not at all clunky. So we have no financial relationships to disclose. I want to give you a little bit of background about this study. It really had a few different purposes. One was to do a literature review, to look at efforts to enumerate the public health workforce. Really the main purpose was to vet a public health workforce taxonomy schema, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that. And the third was to suggest future directions of study. We actually added a fourth, which I'm also going to talk to you about, which was to analyze the first use of that taxonomy through the Public Health WIN survey. So we're excited about that as well, and I'll tell you more about that too. Specifically, we analyzed the Public Health Workforce Taxonomy, which was developed by the University of Michigan Center for Excellence in Public Health Workforce Studies. Are any of you familiar with the taxonomy? Okay, so not a lot. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the taxonomy so that we're all framing this together. This taxonomy was developed with input from state and local health departments and with support from CDC. And the idea was really to examine the feasibility of the taxonomy to characterize the public health workforce. So these are some slides from the University of Michigan, and I just want to share this because this is how they describe the taxonomy. So the idea was to build a standardized schema to systematically characterize every public health worker in the United States. So the idea essentially is to create a common language that we can all use to describe public health workers. So I don't know how many of you have had the experience of trying to explain to your parents or your spouses or your siblings what you do in public health, but it's not particularly easy. And every public health survey of the workforce has had this same challenge where we all describe things in a little bit different way, and there's just not a common language. So the idea was to create this common language to describe public health workers, to then use that as a way to harmonize different surveys. So if everybody is using the same schema, doesn't matter whether you're looking at a survey from organization A or organization B, everybody's describing things the same way. The other thing is, I'll show you the different axes. There are 12 different axes. Not every survey will collect information on every axis, but if you start to grab some information from this survey, some from this survey, some from this survey, and everybody's talking in the same language, we can start to combine that data and have a better, more comprehensive view of what a public health worker looks like. That's the vision. Not an easy place to get to, but I think they're making progress. So these are the 12 axes and the number of subcategories under that. You see that it includes the occupation, the setting that they work in. Is it a state or a local health department? Their education, the job tasks. What is the program area? How is the job funded? Is it federally funded or state funded? What is the demographic? So again, you can just look through these, and if you were able to describe an individual along each of these dimensions, you'd have a pretty good job of what they do. And that, again, is really the vision behind this. The taxonomy is a dynamic tool. It is a living document. It is continuously being updated. There is a steering committee that guides the work of the taxonomy, and they are continuing to revise this along the way because, as you can imagine from what I just described, it's a little bit complex, and you don't get it right the first time or the second time or the third time. You keep working at it. And then I am going to tell you a little bit about some of the data analysis from the Public Health WINS survey. How many of you are familiar with Public Health WINS? Okay, so a few more. So it's the Public Health Workforce Interest and Needs Survey. This was a survey that was fielded by AFSA, the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, funded by the de Beaumont Foundation. And it was really the first survey that utilized this schema. So it utilized the taxonomy. So it was really the first real-world activity where we were able to test some of this. All right, so our study. We conducted the environmental scan. We also did the vetting of the taxonomy. AFSA was a really big partner in helping to vet the taxonomy. We did three different focus groups. Two were with HR directors from state health departments, and one was with AFSA affiliate organizations. And then we also did that analysis of the Public Health Workforce Interest and Needs Survey. The vetting, really, the questions we were trying to ask was, can public health workers be classified using these taxonomy categories and classifications? Do the axes effectively describe the public health workforce? Is it doing what it's intended to do? Within individual axes, are there categories that are missing? And this is a really important one. The analyses that we did on winds was really designed around that as well. And then how can the taxonomy serve as a tool for describing the public health workforce? So as I mentioned, we did these different focus groups. With the HR directors, we broke them into two groups. With one group, we looked specifically at the occupational category axis. With the second group, we looked specifically at the program area axis. And with the ASO affiliate organizations, these are the organizations, essentially you can think about ASO as being the health commissioners in each state, and the affiliates as being the people who work for the health commissioners in each state. So it's the Maternal and Child Health Directors Association. It's the Chronic Disease Directors Association. Those are what the affiliates are, if you're not familiar with them. And so we met with all the different affiliate leadership and talked to them about the taxonomy more broadly, and really wanted to ask them, they do surveys with their members, is this something you would use to describe and classify your own workforce? So some of the cross-cutting findings across the HR directors and the affiliate groups, for several of the axes, we heard specific missing categories. I'll share a few of those. They described that for some public health workers, it's going to just be hard to do this because people wear multiple hats, especially in smaller health departments. People have multiple jobs. You can't just select one thing you do because you do five things. They also suggested that definitions or a crosswalk tool should be developed to map the titles to job categories. So this was a quote from one of the participants, for 80% of our employees it's clear, for others you need a tool to figure it out. This is particularly true with some government job titles, so when you get in and everyone is a program analyst or a policy analyst, it's a little bit hard to classify what they do. And then the taxonomy, ultimately, this is kind of the bottom line, all of them felt that the taxonomy has good potential for utilization as a tool. So everyone seemed on board with trying to adopt this. So this is just some of the specifics here. So what's missing? This is in the occupational category axis. And you see that there were family workers or adult protective workers, disease intervention specialists, accreditation or quality improvement. These were consistent areas that people thought were missing. Vital records was a big one, regulatory was a big one. And then there were some other specific ones as well. And then for program areas specifically, we heard the regulatory again, but under program area there were a lot more specific ones around credentialing, accreditation, minority health, whatever it may be. So again, a lot of areas that were missing. I should mention that really the intent of this project is to capture all this and take it back to that steering committee so that the University of Michigan group can continue to refine this. So they're getting all of this information back from us. So that was the first part of the study. Now I want to shift gears and talk a little bit about the public health wins analysis. And this was really kind of a cool add-on to this study. So as I mentioned, public health wins was really the first activity, the first effort to use the taxonomy. One of the things that they did is that they put all of those different response options. So one thing to keep in mind with the taxonomy, I should have mentioned this up front, but it's really important because it's kind of a hard thing to get, took me a while to get my head around it. The taxonomy is, you can think of it kind of as the response options to a survey. So it's what you select in the survey. It doesn't have the questions. So one of the recommendations we came up with, one of the things the steering committee is talking about is having a standard set of questions, because how you ask the questions sometimes determines the answer you get. So that is one of those different, that's one of the issues with the taxonomy that's being worked on. But within the WIN survey, they came up with a set of questions to ask to get at these different responses. And for three of the axes, they included other and an open-ended response. And we thought that was a really phenomenal opportunity to figure out what's missing from the taxonomy. So that's what we did, is we analyzed the other open-ended responses. We did this mostly for the occupation axis and the program area axis. We tried for the certifications axis, but that part of the survey just did not work well because people did not really understand the distinction between certifications and licensure. So almost everything that was open-ended was something that should have been in the licensure section. So that was just... it didn't really pan out very well. Our goals were to reduce the number of people in the other category. So if we looked at the other response and they actually fit into something but hadn't selected it, we put them back in and we reduced the variance. And then we also wanted to look at the missing categories and see if those aligned with some of the things that were recommended through our focus groups. We worked very closely with the University of Michigan in this, so we had a team of researchers who were analyzing the qualitative open-ended responses. They also did. We completely worked independently and then came together to see how much consistency there was between the teams, which was it worked out very nicely. For each response, we classified it either as should have been in an existing category, it should have been in another axis, and that was the licensure issue for the most part, or it remained other. It really was an other response. And then we also provided a code if it was one of the things that came out through the focus groups. So these are the findings. So within the occupation category, there were almost 20,000, just over 19,000 respondents. 84%, there were more than that. There were about 22,000 respondents. 84% or 19,000 of those were able to classify themselves within one of the categories. 16% weren't, though, and so we had 3,700 open-ended responses, or 3,700 other responses, of which 85%, or about 3,000 of those, actually provided an open-ended response. Some of those we had to throw out, so I can't tell you how many people selected as their occupation worker bee, or things like that. Probably not something we want to add to the taxonomy. But a lot of them were really useful. So within that, we were able to actually get almost 500 of them into one of the existing categories. Again, reduced the variance quite a bit. 16% of those 3,000 fit into an existing category. About 21% fit into an updated category. So I mentioned that the taxonomy is a living document. Between the time that WINS was actually fielded and when we did our analysis, the working group had actually added some categories. So we were able to fit them into things that had been added since then that weren't available for WINS. And then for some of them, we also put them into what we called a more specific other category. So within the other, or within the taxonomy, you could select other, or you could select like other management, other professionals. So some of them we were able to get a little bit more granular, but they were still other. And then about 600 just didn't fit. They were truly others. So within that, about 22%, these are the ones that fit into some of the more specific categories. Almost 300 of them fit into that regulatory category. 70 fit into the supervisor category, 54 into the planner. So again, a lot of these fit into what we heard from the focus group. So it was really neat to see kind of the real world, the living example of this being used, actually fit with the qualitative feedback we got. Going on to the program area, about 78% were able to classify themselves into an existing taxonomy category. That left 22%, or about 4,400, who selected other, of which about 3,800 provided qualitative data that we were able to analyze. 18% of those we were able to slot into an existing category, again, reduce the variance. About 41% fit into other program area, or remained in other program area. We weren't able to slot them in, so a little bit more here. 36% actually aligned with things that had been recommended through the focus groups, and then we did have to exclude a few. And again, almost 90% roughly, 85% of these actually were in the regulatory area, so that was a huge missing area that has since been added to the taxonomy. But also a lot fit into the laboratory area, a lot fit into the informatics area, and you can see the others as well, which are all areas that have been recommended to the taxonomy steering committee. So overall, the taxonomy did pretty good. 95% of the people were able to classify themselves by occupation, 82% were able to be classified by program area. We felt that the first use of the taxonomy actually did do pretty well overall, and it showed a lot of utility for the successful use. And our biggest recommendation from our study, and the steering committee was already two steps ahead of us because they're already working on this, was come up with a standard set of questions so that when these different groups are asking these questions, we can get to the standard set of answers. Limitations, the study focuses on the governmental sector of the public health workforce. The conversations we had with the HR directors were a very small subset of states. And the WINS analysis has its own limitations due to the subjectivity. It was a qualitative process to reclassify. We felt we minimized some of that by having two separate teams doing the work, but it was still qualitative. Our conclusions, the environmental scan really did highlight, I didn't talk about that, but as you can imagine, it highlighted the difficulty in enumerating the public health workforce because of inconsistencies in the data collection and classifications. The taxonomy did appear to really work pretty well. The adaptations we heard through our focus groups seemed to be particularly helpful and aligned with a lot of what we saw in the Public Health WIN survey. And the WIN survey itself showed that the occupation and program area categories performed pretty well, but again, needed to have survey questions that aligned to them to be able to translate. And that's what I have.
Okay, thank you to all of our presenters. Are there any questions? Yes.
Michael, on the taxonomy which you mentioned is meant to apply to governmental and public health, the focus group in the PHWIN data, those are focused on state health departments. And there are a lot of workers in federal, tribal, territorial, and in particular local health departments. So how, and categories of jobs may vary considerably at those levels. So how does that fit into
SBA? I think that's a good point. So WINS did include local data, I believe, for 6 years.
But
they did for 6 years. So it, you know, it's a small subset, but it did have some local data. I think that's a legitimate issue, particularly on the focus group side. We really did focus on state HR directors that also affiliate for cross state HR people. I think you're right. I think doing some of this additional work looking for local level would add some sense to it.
Maybe ask you one of the follow ups.
We can always recommend, yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Just to follow up on that, so some of the data, the local data was Big City Health Coalition members, and I wonder if you looked at if those categories the locals, if you did that data analysis.
We did not. So you're right. So within WIN, they did capture. So I mentioned within the 6 states, they captured local. In addition to that, they also captured from Big City separately. So those are 2 separate locals they did talk to or they did survey. We did not do that analysis. I think that APCO and the Beaumont are continuing to do that analysis.
Yes. Any other
I work at the Paradigm University Learning Center at Columbia University, and you had mentioned that around 60% of the state public health workers use their competency and around 26% at the local level. And we found a lot of the same issue with our online system. We have a lot of things from other states, from both internationally and conferences, but sometimes in our own backyard, there are local health departments that don't always have the incentive or interest in the competency-based training, but they are mentioned in other types of training. So I was wondering, what are the latest incentives or ways at the local level where we can generate more interest in competency?
That's a very good question. And we're very open to ideas. I think what we're seeing driving perhaps the most of the interest, or I would say there's been more interest recently than potentially in the past, and Ron has been with the council longer than I have, so we can speak to that as well. But I think a lot of what the incentive has been lately, or the driving force behind working with this conference, has been accreditation. Because people are now really, not that they maybe weren't before, but in a very systematic way, having to develop workforce development and having to consider what the job descriptions are, competency-based, and all those things. And I think that's probably the biggest driver. I know in the staff session the other day where they said uptake for accreditation, obviously higher on states and higher on larger local departments than all the smaller local departments. Outside of that, there's no, you know, the rules that you have to use. but what we're trying to do is really make it as easy as possible. So what we love to hear is feedback about, like, we got a ton of feedback in the last revision process about how we really think these ideas are great, like concepts are great, and they're very well capturing what we do, but we don't know what you're talking about. which we can't read them. So for our folks, it's been really like I'm trying to make them more easy to use and hope that translates into more use. I don't know if other intent. I don't have any really great answers, unfortunately, with that one, but I would love to hear some great answers.
Yes, ma'am.
My question is for you as well.
Sure.
About the accreditation board.
Okay.
So we rely very heavily on, we're looking very closely at the work that you all are doing. It's very, very helpful to us and I think I got a little confused.
Sure.
I apologize for asking.
Okay.
And you mentioned that some work was done to tease some things out. Some things were blurred somewhat. And you were referring to the core competency group, and that was because that was the thing you talked about doing a short list. Was the short list related to the competency?
Yes.
Itself? It is.
Yeah, so I think we have a couple of, one of the things that I mentioned was that we really, when we were doing this latest revision process, so the core competencies are reviewed every 3 years approximately to determine whether they remain relevant, whether they're working the way, you know, they should. Whether they're actually helpful, basically, because we want them to evolve along with the field as it evolves. And one of the things that we did in the latest revision process was we did focus a lot on the language and trying to better articulate the competencies. But one of the things that I think we found is some of the feedback that we got was that some competencies were capturing sort of more than one thing. So in the district, like when you're developing competencies, you want to be very careful that with each statement you're only focused on one thing. So I think there was some blurring, overlaps, maybe not the right word, but they weren't as distinct as they could have been in terms of the individual competencies data. So that was one of the things that we paid attention to, both in terms of the individual statements themselves and how and where they appeared in the competencies, because we also didn't want to have the same concept appear, or the same competency essentially appear in more than one domain. We want it to be in one place and one place only. So I think we've made improvements in that area, which I think maybe gets at some of that what you're saying about the blur. In terms of the short list of the core competencies, it is related to the core competencies in that we've tried to group similar concepts together. So for example, within, I think it's in the program, policy development program planning domain, there are, I think there's three or four competencies that relate to evaluation. So it's like understanding evaluation, actually doing evaluation, and using the results of the evaluation. And because they're all separate things, and you could, you know a lot about one and not about another, they're divided into separate competencies. But say when you're writing a job description, are you going to write all of the things in the job description, or are you going to say, I need someone to do evaluation? And so what we're trying to do with the shortlist is sort of group those four maybe together so that you have a category of evaluation, and then there's a map that translates so it shows, oh, you need someone who can do evaluation. Here are the individual competencies that we have that relate to evaluation. So then when you go to like train or something like that to look for courses by competency, you know what competencies went into that category. So does that make it more clear or less clear?
Any other comments or questions? Yes.
So we talked about refreshing the core competency, but wondering how often in the process this works, refreshing the content courses, the process of doing that. So that stay outdated courses are still on the train.
So all courses that are put into the system, actually, all not just the first. Providers have to be approved and the courses have to be approved. In terms of the content, we're actually going through right now and kind of reviewing when was the last time people registered for certain courses, particularly looking at competency-based courses, seeing if people are still taking them. It's a bit of a struggle because in some ways we have to choose whether if you take something off and there's nothing else there, you know, does that leave a gap in what's available, or do we determine that that's no longer really relevant? The competencies, as they're updated, you know, outside of train, they're actually updated in train as well. So we have a pretty dynamic tool right now, and as soon as they make any changes in the future, we parts of your question in terms of the competencies changing and the quality of the courses within the network as well. Does that help answer your question?
That helps, but what I was getting at also is how do we know that there's not a course out there in 1999 with the process of replacing that with refreshing and updating it so that both the updated and old outdated course refreshed in decades.
So the process, I guess, that Steve sent us right now is we work with our earlier partners who are largely connected to their providers to make sure that the courses that are being taken, people are reviewing them, and that the review process to make sure that that content is reflecting what people need to know. Providers are encouraged to post the date that they the course in and the date that they updated the course. So most courses, I want to say, have that information somewhere. But not all, and that's something that we're looking at as we actually are reviewing the entire platform to make that probably a required field. On the back end, we know when they posted the content to the system. It's a little bit more of a challenge because we don't control the courses, so if they posted it to the system or the network this year, we have to go back to their site or to that actual partner and ask, okay, when was this actually developed? So it's a little bit more challenging on that level. But they're not usually as old as 1999.
Any other comments or questions? Yes, ma'am.
I have a question for Michael. Mm-hmm. Is there probably a push to look at internationally, you know, taxonomy? Because I know there are so many different titles for, you know, just to look at job descriptions, creating job descriptions,
Yeah, it's probably a better question for the people in Michigan, but because I don't want to speak on their behalf, but my sense is that the focus of the taxonomy primarily is on the United States workforce, because we haven't figured out our own workforce without bringing in the United States.
Any other comments or questions? Yes, ma'am.
I don't know if I missed this, but what was the basis of your determining which courses were mandatory for the
We developed our own mandatory courses and put it on tax rating on the system, and so every employee had to do that. How did we determine the content of that?
The basis of what was mandatory, what was it? Like, was that based on, I guess, the scale that you used, or I'm just trying to gauge that.
Any other comments or questions? Oh, wait.
Demographic information as they're going through the account creation process, they seem to just want to finish and skip the part where it says optional. So that benefits us and our data, I guess, in the long term.
Okay.
they not based on demographics, but based on physical location.
Okay, any other comments or questions? All right, thank you for attending on behalf of the Health Administration section.